This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. 2021 was a far cry from the return to normal that some of us expected at the end of 2020. Instead, you know, we saw continued movement restrictions. We continued to stay at home in a bit to, you know, keep the pandemic under control. But it was pretty much, for a lot of us, a repeat of what 2020 was. So now, as we look forward to another new year, to 2022, we also want to look back at the year that was. And in the first episode of this short series, I'm joined by HR consultant Deepa George and consultant clinical psychologist Dr. Joel Low to look back at the year that was at work, you know, especially for those of us who have been working remotely. What was that like? What have we gone through? And perhaps what we can learn as well to look forward to 2022. How are both of you doing today?
Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm good too. Thanks.
So if we start, you know, if we look back at 2021, right? And I'll start with you first, Deepa. What word would you use to describe the past year in terms of work or how we worked?
Okay, one word I would say would have been unpredictable. Just when we thought we had figured it out, something changed again. And there was just this constant need to pivot and change our style. So it was really, to me, the order of the day was about make things happen. Whatever industry, I've noticed that people were really forced to just make things happen. So, you know, unpredictable. And if it was a phrase, I would say just make it happen. That is what was expected of us at work.
And for you, Joel?
I think I quite resonate with what Deepa was saying. But I think just to add on a bit about that, it was also about the idea of hanging on. We just had to cling on there and just not let go in that sense. Right?
What was work like for you, Joel? You know, was it still largely work from home, especially, you know, as a psychologist?
Yeah, I think our field of therapy, I think we've been quite lucky, right? Because I think our work was quite easily transitionable online, right? Mm-hmm. So from an early stage, about a month in from the first MCO that we had, we were able to transition online and start seeing our clients online. So by and large, work-wise, it's been pretty much the same, actually. The only thing that's changed is really the medium in which we practice. So we've been doing a lot more like Zoom calls and things like that. So for us, it's pretty much the same. I think now that we are starting to venture back in the office, then there's a lot more precautions to take, you know, making sure everyone's safe, vaccinated before they come in, things like that. So that part's changed. But, you know, by and large, it's been pretty much, as you were for our field, I would think.
And what about for you, Deepa?
Yeah, I would say that, because I'm working with a couple of clients, for the entire MCO period, obviously it was work from home. There were some urgent meetings that needed to be done. So when things opened up, I had to go into the office on a very, you know, sort of calculated basis, very minimal number of people. And even now we see a very mixed hybrid is the term they use, right? A group of the hybrid type of work environment. So some people are still fully work from home. Some are doing a rotation like you guys. And some are just doing up to you what you want. Some people are much better performers when they're at the workplace. Mm. Some people are happy to work at home, but they don't have a place to work at home. It's really a matter of a mixing the element of choice and productivity. So hopefully there's no interruption to business continuity while taking care of the employee welfare. I'd say that's the fine balance.
Deepa, do you think that work has defined a lot of what 2021 was for people? Because like personally, right, for me, you know, when I try to think back about the past year, whether anything significant had happened, I struggled to sort of find that moment, you know, because all I could think was like work, staying at home. I guess did you see that with a lot of people as well?
Yes, I think you hit it on the head when you said that, because that was really the only out of home experience was really work, because that was the only thing we were allowed to do. There was no socializing and so on. Mm. So I would say that's absolutely true. And the other thing that had defined a lot of people were defining by work, and then they were really trying to do a lot of reflection. Is this a place I feel stable, feel secure? And three things I always think people think about. They think about their role, their comfort in their role. They think about the comfort in the industry or the company. And of course, we all know the saying, right? People don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. So the comfort with their supervisors. So I think there was a lot of self-reflection going around, about how they fit with their role, how they identify with their company, and how they identify with their bosses. That's how I say.
What toll does it take on our mental health, Joel, when you see, realize that you can't even remember what has happened in the past year except work or your household responsibilities? I mean, that must take a toll on people, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think as humans, we are, a lot of our memories are very encoded in the events that happen in our life. You know, that's why if I asked you what you did for, you know, your birthday like a couple of years ago, or when you got married, or when you got proposed to, and things like that, being encode those kind of things in our lives, right? And the reason why we can do that is because it's so such distinct moments in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. But now that we're at home, everything is just one giant mesh of everything, right? And we were just talking about it before we started the show as well, when the last time I saw you online for that the other event that we did together, and we both totally lost track of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very clear example, because there's just no distinction, there's no full stop, there's no commas, it's just one giant mesh of time compressed together in the past 2 years in that sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the toll it takes is that it starts becoming very wary, right? I think last time in the past, where things were quote-unquote normal, there were distinctions to be had, right? When you go to the office, it's one place. You come back home, it's another place. I go to a restaurant for dinner, it's another place. But when everything meshes up together, I think it gets us very antsy because we don't have that distinction. It becomes our home is now our workplace, our gathering place, our socializing place. It's everything into one. And I think human beings, naturally, we rail against that. We don't like it, right? I think we like movement, we like freedom, we like different kind of spots and places to give us a bit of a change, I think. And that's what's the biggest toll I think it would take on us.
Yeah, definitely. I think even as an introvert myself, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of going out of the house before the pandemic. But I think right now I really miss that act of, you know, making plans with people, going out to see friends. I think not being able to do that has made me really miss the freedom to make that choice. And now we don't have that freedom, right? You sometimes can't even choose when you want to go into work.
That's right. That's right.
I can imagine that must take quite a toll in return, you know, if that stress is taking a toll on our mental health, that in return would take a toll on our work as well, isn't it? Like on our productivity, on how interested people are in their work.
You're right, because you see, there were so many other components, right, to going to work, as what Joel mentioned. There was the social element.
Mm.
You cannot trivialize or you know, downplay the importance of a coffee chat or a water cooler chat or whatever is maybe your drink of choice, you know, and the innovation that happens over these discussions, even ideas or, hey, how about we do this? All those ideation, those moments were kind of lost. And for some people, they thrive on that because it's those informal instances that really give them that job satisfaction other than just sitting down and doing their routine work. So all was left is, first of all, your bosses or your colleagues would never see your input in your work. All they saw was output. So nobody knows how you're doing work. So no matter how hard you work, some people were very big on visibility at work, right? And suddenly that's gone. And some people were very effective communicators and socializers who were ideating when those happened. That's gone. So I think it definitely, as Joel mentioned, it took a toll because you had to give all that up, and all you are measured is, back to my first point, is just make it happen. Show me the money or show me the results or show me the product or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Because you wouldn't even, sometimes you might feel that you're imposing on people, right? If you were to suddenly drop them a message, oh, what do you think of this idea? Because if it were to happen in person, it would be very casual, you know, just a throwaway comment maybe. But when you have to do it over an email or over a message, you might think, you know, oh, am I imposing on them and am I disturbing the other person? And there's just so many things that play through your mind.
If I can share an example of one of the junior colleagues in the office who had joined during the COVID period and so never met their colleagues for a long time. And I love how he said, what a difference from the first job where he could just sit in his chair and roll across to the table next door and say, is this looking right? And now what is he supposed to do? Take a screenshot and send it on an email or a WhatsApp? And that suddenly seems much more imposing and an interruption to the other senior colleagues' workflow. And then just little things end up being stressors to the junior people who now suddenly have no way to get guidance unless it's a formal avenue. That's just an example to share.
But I really resonate with that as well. We've had a few new joiners who joined us during the pandemic as well. And you know how therapy is quite a lonely profession in the sense that, you know, I'm in my room, I talk to my clients and it's just two of us, right? And it's the time in between sessions where we do a lot of team building, we talk a bit, we process clients and things like that. It's quite a supportive environment, right? But exactly like what Deepa said, you know, now the new joiners have come in and they're totally you know, if they just graduated, for example, they're totally on their own. They're seeing their clients. They come out. They just want to vent and decompress because they had a hard session and they can't. They don't have anywhere to go to, right?
Mm.
And I totally hear you, right? And I think the phrase that we hear a lot is that I feel so lonely. I feel so stranded, you know, and they just lack that ability to just reach out and just speak to someone. And it's not even sometimes not even about the work that they're doing. It's just about saying, oh, I'm so relieved. It's, you know, my first client, or, you know, I felt so good. It was such a good session. And it's just little bits, little pieces here and there that are missing from the equation that take such a big toll on us. I totally get what Deepa is saying as well. Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Joel, do you think that we still have work-life balance, or is that just a phrase we throw about, we bandy about, but it's really a utopia at this point?
Honestly, even before the pandemic and lockdown, I don't even think even then we had that, right? And I think that's actually, and I truly believe that, right? Because I actually proposed the idea of work-life integration instead. Because if you think about balance, right, what does that suggest? That you spend, 8 hours at work means you have 8 hours free after that. We all, three of us, know that's not going to happen. It's not true, right? We've got emails, we've got WhatsApp, we've got handphones. People are going to contact us as and when. Maybe we don't respond, but that means that once we get the message in, it's going to be weighing on our heads. And it works both ways as well. If I'm at work and if I get a message from my wife that, oh, my kid fell down or hurt himself, that means when I'm at work, I'm not going to be engaged anyway, right? Because I'm worried about my kid. So I think what's happening, or even before the pandemic, I think the idea of work-life integration seems a lot more feasible, because that's life. It's one giant cohesive whole. And I think during this pandemic, that's become so much more clear, right? Because there is no distinction, right? It's just one giant mesh of things together. And then I think the more we are able to adapt to that and live to that idea, I think the more comfortable we'll be as well. Because if you're trying to balance so many things at the same time, it's like balancing spinning balls in your hands, right? How many can you spin and how long can you stand for? It's not going to be easy, right?
Hmm. Deepa, do you think it's become more difficult for people to switch off? Because now, you know, especially with remote work, it seems like people are almost expected to be online all the time, you know, expected to be reachable all the time. So, for example, even when you take a day off, you are almost anxious to really take a day off and to be completely shut off from your colleagues in case something crops up at work. Do you see that as another challenge as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of it is, as you mentioned, the perspective from the employee who wants to take a day off, right? And feels that guilt, or like, am I allowed to, and so on. And the other side, the reality is all the other colleagues, all the bosses know full well they're not going anywhere. Where's Deepa going? She's not, you know, she's off and she's at home. So if you wanted to be contactable, you have that whole guilt. You have to almost lie, which is what some people have resorted to. Because what are you going to say? Sorry, I'm not free. I'm home. You know, so it's really quite tough, I agree. And that's why I feel it's so important that, and the other concept is you want to take rest. Some people's definition of what they do during their time off is not things that they can do in the home environment.
Mm.
So if that's the case, if they want to go for, you know, during that time, you couldn't even exercise, right? Or go for a walk or go for a bicycle ride. That was that time. So how do you get, you know, I really was trying to get the teams at work to try and figure out what they can do for social and rest snacking, as I call it, right? You know, there's so much literature on it. So that was really important. But you're absolutely right. The employee feels that guilt and that, you know, that and some people take advantage of it at the workplace. That's a reality.
Hmm. And it's very different from before when, for example, everyone would be at work and if someone wasn't in the office, that person was on leave, right? Versus now, some of your colleagues may not even know that you're on leave. You know, they just drop you a message and be like, hey, can you do this thing for me? And that must be quite difficult as an employee to balance, right? Because do you really take your time off, or do you also help out a colleague who needs a hand?
And I think one thing some of the companies did quite well, I know, is that even though they were not big on this whole out-of-office message culture before, during this pandemic, I really applaud the leaders who said, let's be actively supporting people who are taking time off. So please put an out-of-office message so that your colleagues know that unless it's urgent, don't, trouble them. If it can wait for 2 days, why does it need to be done today? You know, it's very selfish when the colleague expects it just because they need it. Right. For the other colleagues on leave, it's actually selfish, isn't it?
Mm. We'll go for a quick break now. And when we come back, you know, let's continue our discussion then. Joining me today are HR consultant Deepa George and consultant clinical psychologist Dr. Joel Low on what 2021 was like for people working from home and the impact that had on their mental health. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Lim Suan. Joining me today as part of a mini-series looking back at the year that was 2021 are HR consultant Deepa George and consultant clinical psychologist Dr. Joel Low. And we're discussing specifically, what 2021 was like for people who have been working from home, and these people are now adapting back to the office, and how their mental well-being, their emotional well-being has fed through these changes, and including how their employers are sort of taking more proactive action about employees' mental well-being. And I guess on that note, Joel, have you seen people really taking that time off for self-care? I mean, we see this being said so often, right? People are saying, okay, I'm taking time off for myself to do something I enjoy, for some self-care, but are people really getting that rest that they need to feel not just physically better, but emotionally better as well?
I think the intentionality is always there, right? When people take time off. But like what Deepa mentioned just now, I totally agree with it. It's sometimes that idea or that version or the manifestation of self-care is just not available to us, right? For some people, it's traveling. For some people, it's exploring new makan places. For some people, it's going back to visit friends and family. And when that's not available to you, then what do you do, right? And I think while, like what Deepa was saying, we can take time off and be at home, right? But ultimately, if that's where we find the most stress, right? If let's say we live in a house where it's packed with people, for example, so being away from work is actually more stressful because I then don't have any time to myself. I have to listen to everyone running around, everyone screaming, going online classes or meetings and whatnot in that sense, right? I think that could actually pile on the stress. So I think while the intention is always there, the ability to do so, that's incredibly hard. And I think one thing that a lot of the clients that we work with, we've had to do is to get really, really creative with them. Like trying to really brainstorm different ideas on how you can take time off and things like that, right? Like, for example, one client that we spoke to, she really enjoyed the beach, right? That was her thing. She would, pre-COVID, she would go on trips on scuba diving trips and things like that. So one of the things that we actually got to do, and she was lucky, like, she had the resources to do so. She got a really nice pair of noise-canceling earphones, and then she put on some those kind of ambient beach sounds, water sounds and things like that, and she just zoned out, right, for an hour and so. And for her, even though it was just imaginary, it was really restorative because it connected her with a happy place. How many people can do that, right? I think that's something that also needs to be asked as well. But as much as we can, we try, definitely.
Definitely. And I think we saw a lot of people I think it was interesting to see how creative people got within their own homes to try to find that slice of zen that they could, right, in their home, amidst all the sometimes the kids screaming behind Zoom, the nonstop meetings and things like that. But on another note, and perhaps I'll direct this to you, Deepa, anecdotally, we seem to see a lot more frustration among people with their work or unhappiness with their jobs, or perhaps in like what you said earlier, people were leaving their bosses because they were unhappy with how they were being managed. How much did you see people sort of being tied down to their job because they needed that income security, especially during these times?
So I think, you read about the great resignation, which is out there at the moment. And you are absolutely right. Depending on the personal status of the individual, the family, the commitments, a lot of people were tied down and locked into their jobs, right? Very few individuals had the luxury of course, if you're in certain industries like in healthcare and e-commerce, which are booming, and you had an opportunity to change jobs and go to that, a lot of people did that. They moved. But otherwise, you're right. People just felt tied down because of the sense of security that having a job is better than no job, or what if that new place, So that was definitely a big stressor. In fact, we did have a few colleagues and, clients and team members at places that were directed to, premises like Dr. Joel's place and so on, because they were really suffering from that. They felt trapped. Mm-hmm. So either they felt trapped because it was a job they didn't like, all the supervisors really sort of made them work to the point where they had no choice because they knew that this person's not going to leave. So it really boils down to also how that relationship is there. Is there, is the boss understanding of the personal situation of employees? Sometimes the bosses might be living in a, luxurious element where there's a room for every person. They don't realize this individual is in a household with, like what Joel said, five different households in five different members in a room with three room household. One family member on dining table, one on the living room, they have backache, they have eye strain, all sorts of, problems. on top of that, they're just being pushed to do more and more work. So it's really difficult. But yes, people felt stuck and they couldn't have that luxury of leaving.
Hmm. Joel, what advice would you have in these situations, you know, for people who are stuck in these situations and feeling that mental stress? Because, I mean, I understand that a huge part of this is also the responsibility of the employer, right? But how much can that individual mitigate that situation?
I think it's a shared responsibility. So I think as much as an employer can do a lot to enact policies or rules in place to make sure that everyone is taken care of, ultimately, I think as an employee, you need to be able to take care of yourself as well and advocate for what you need and what you want, right? Like what Deepa was saying just now, I think whenever we are able to or we have the resources or luxury to, then if we are in a job that is a bad match, either because of the personnel or the role that we're doing, then leaving is definitely a good option to consider, right? Because then that allows us to pursue something that gives us a bit more peace even, right? I'm not going to say satisfaction, but this peace, the work that we're doing, right? But I think there are also times when that cannot be an option because I don't have any other thing to go for. I need the resources. I need to fulfill my commitments and things like that. Then I think responsibility is also on the employee themselves to try and make the best out of the situation, right? You know, there are things like, for example, we can change the different perspectives that we take on the work that we do. We can change the way we do the work, the way we see our work as well. I think those are some really simplistic things that we can do to try and change our relationship with our job, right? I think sometimes when we are prior to the pandemic, being able to go to the office is actually quite distracting if you think about it. Like exactly for what you both said just now. If I'm having a bad day, I get to go to the pantry and whine about it to my best friend in the office. I can have a cup of coffee and just take my mind off things. But when I'm at home and I'm alone in my own thoughts, it can get very noisy in that sense because I'm alone with my inner demons and my frustrations and all that. And everything that you feel anxious about, insecure about, is going to get amplified a millionfold. So being able to change the narrative, change the relationship we have with your job is going to be so incredibly important to help you find some respite, despite you being in a situation where you don't like.
I feel like this is coming from a very privileged perspective when I ask this next question, but do you think more people are realizing that, you know, their work is no longer just about the rat race, no longer just about, you know, pursuing the next step, earning more money, getting a better position, but more about whether they are happy with what they're doing? Deepa?
I guess you're right to say, I mean, not that it's coming from a position of, some privileged position itself, but you know, we talk about how the new work culture, the new generation wants a sense of purpose, they want a sense of connectedness, and I can't agree with it more because it's really, if I think about, you know, for those of us in Gen X, and when we were there, we were, you know, it's not so much like a job for life, but we were quite accepting of, you know, instructions. If we were not consulted as much, it wasn't that bad. It was more really about doing, but having a sense of choice and being able to do the work we wanted to. As much as we did, but we still had that option. We still had that mentality that you find another job before you move jobs, right? And today in this day and age, yes, a lot of people, maybe it's a gig economy. There are people who work three jobs. I have a family member who is doing three roles, including pharmacist, fitness training, and something in religion, right? And it's amazing to see how she juggles that, you know? So I would say that at this stage, it's important to, again, look at everything in balance. But if you are talking about connecting with a sense of purpose, yes, that's really important today. But I also find some employees who leave organizations during COVID. And this is a very interesting point. I don't know, Joel, if you'll agree as well, if you've seen this. They want to know what the company stands for. So if the company is doing well, they are grateful to have their job. That's great. But this group wants to know, so what are you doing for the larger good, for the community? Mm. Since you guys are doing well, are you giving back? So I'm stable, I'm secure, but are you doing your part for the community? And that was really interesting to see. That's a new perspective I found in this time.
And I think there's something that we see as well. I think a lot more people are asking questions that are beyond themselves. I think like what Sven was saying just now, you know, a few generations ago, maybe one generation ago, it was really about the rat race, about what more can I do, what more can I gain about my personal development and advancement and things like that. But increasingly, maybe it's the internet, maybe it's the whole woke culture thing, I don't know, social media and stuff like that. But people are also asking questions that are bigger than themselves. What are we doing for the environment, for example? How do we advocate for women's rights, LGBTQ rights, for example, and things like that? And these really matter to them. They give them a sense of person, give them a sense of, it's to give them a mission, basically, their purpose in life and what they want to try and achieve. And I think that, like what Deepa said, and I totally agree, gives them a bigger sense of a commitment to the role that they're doing, the job that they're doing, because it's beyond them as well, right? Which is not a bad way to go about it, I think. I think the only issue is that when you take that those ideals and you compare them with the ideals of our parents, for example, then you're going to see a lot of friction, which is an issue because in many, many companies, the managers, supervisors are of that generation, right? Yeah. And then they go, hey, what's going on, right? So I think that's that mismatch there a little bit. So I definitely agree.
We've been talking a lot about the downsides of remote working in the past year, the past 2 years, really. But conversely, you know, is it also normal if some people have felt that, you know, they have been quite productive, that they're happy with what they're doing? Because I feel like sometimes we too often we see people unhappy or struggling, but we also don't hear enough about the people who think, is it okay if I feel like I'm doing fine? Joel?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so, right? And just to add on a little more to that, right? These people actually even feel guilty about it because they're saying, hey, everyone's struggling. Why am I enjoying this? What's going on? Am I okay, right? And we had a couple of clients like that as well came in for those reasons. And they were worried that they're actually introverted in nature or I don't like people and things like that. Right? But no, our positive vibes from wherever we find it. And if it's right for us, then it's right for us. Be it at the office or at home, right? And I think it's actually... you know, if it's something that you can thrive on, it's fantastic, right? Like for me, for example, I mean, I'm lucky because I'm quite flexible in my time. But being forced to stay home more often than not meant that I could see my two girls grow up, which was wonderful, fantastic, and I loved it, right? And I was lucky enough to be able to balance the two line in the sense that I could help them with school and go to work and stuff like that, which is great. And that's where I found my happy, which is fantastic, right? You tell that to someone who's 20 without a family, who works alone and thrives on social engagements and things like that, no, that's a different story altogether. So I think, yes, you're absolutely right, Sue. And I think there are a lot of people out there who have found their sweet spot, so to speak. And moving forward, like I think Deepa was saying, the great resignation, right? I think that's something that's going to be factored in as well. Why am I not allowed to do things the way I want to do it? If I can get a job done, why do you care in that sense, right? I think that's going to be a big, big factor moving forward, I would think.
If there's no right or wrong way to go about this, that must make it quite difficult for employers potentially, right, Deepa? If they're trying to think, you know, how do we adapt to this new normal? But there's also no one size fits all for your employees. And to create a work policy that is flexible enough might also be quite challenging for a lot of employers who perhaps would want a standard policy for all.
Yeah. So, I mean, if and when you ever find the answer, let me know. But what I will say is, I think the two things which employers need to change in terms of our mindset, right, is this is the best time to check whether we've been measuring productivity versus visibility all this while. Okay. So again, so the person who speaks the loudest is seen the most, who knows, I'm not even talking about brown nosing or ampu. I'm just talking about pure seen around, you know, the people who come in at 8 o'clock and leave at 8 o'clock at night, but their productivity is not necessarily different from the person who keeps their 9 to 5 typed. So you need to be able to differentiate. And so one is productivity versus visibility, check ourselves as employers. And with that, then comes your output versus input. But you must also give chance to the people whose input may be very rigorous, very process-driven, very very good in terms of detail orientation and so on. But their output may not be the same level simply because of other things outside their control. And then there are those who might be very good at working smart today. And so their input may look very light, but hey, they achieved that same outcome with the same rigor you needed. So it's really about being able to customize your approach as an employer and a supervisor to your team. So with that in mind, how do we use the hybrid environment? So this is where I really struggle to get the right answer. What I do know is if we can have a consultative element where the employers and the managers and the teams talk together, decide what are the non-negotiables. For example, Monday morning, everyone must be in because we have town hall. Mm. Or do on a rotation, okay? Or once in every 2 weeks on a Wednesday, we're going to have a makan minum session at 4 p.m. with teh tarik, and I'd like people to socialize. So have some non-negotiables and then work around around the rest of it. And then give people the option. Some people say, but I really have no place at home. I want to be in the office. So then prioritize that. Some people who've taken an hour and a half one way to travel to work love working from home because there's suddenly this time that's freed up for them.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no one-size-fits-all. There's no magic pill or answer, but the idea is to have the consultation with both parties, know what your productivity indicators are in terms of what the business needs to keep running, and have conversations. I think that's the only way that it can happen.
Hmm. Deepa, do you see more employers taking or placing more importance on the mental health of their employees, especially, you know, throughout the pandemic and what they've seen in their employees?
Definitely. And I'm glad that they've put their money where their mouth is, literally, because mm-hmm. there have been new benefits to this. You know, and hopefully Joel's seen the same, because in the past, this is not something people talked about. So two things. One is money, which means either they use, some companies are already progressive. They have things called flexi benefits, right? Where you have the same pot of money that anyone can use. So whether you're 25, 35, 45, you can use it for whatever your choice of needs are. All right, for that same amount of money. And suddenly mental health, you know, claims are allowed to be in there. The second and much more important is I've never heard anybody take a MC before for not feeling right in terms of I'm stressed. That's never been a reason for an MC in the past. So today people are a little bit more open, both employers as well as employees, to say, I need an MC today. And, you know, they're not necessarily going to see it. Some places have this thing called casual leave, mm-hmm. where you don't need a certificate to show that you went to the doctor. And that's quite progressive. And it's needed. Everybody's body and mind may break down two or three times
yeah.
a year.
Yep.
So just being able to say, you know, I'm just not there. I just didn't sleep well. I'm really having a headache and I just need the day off. You know, those are things that are showing that we are moving with the time. So those are the two things. One is the money and the other one is more openness to accept that people need time off for. Just taking a break.
Anything you want to add, Joel?
No, I think I agree with Deepa, and we are seeing more companies are open to the idea, right? I think, 5 years ago, as recent as that, you know, the companies that typically would engage centerline hours for EAP services, employee assistance program, for example, would be your big MNCs and things like that, like, because from an international level, they have in the States, whatever it is, so they want it to go down to Malaysia. But over the past couple of years, you see a lot more homegrown brands. The SMEs, for example, don't typically allocate a lot more to this kind of open up minds, but also their wallets as well to offer this kind of services, which is great, right? Because I think increasingly people are both the benefits, but also the mental health, emotional benefits as well.
So now, you know, we are starting to see, or we have been seeing, the exodus of people out from their homes again. People are slowly coming back to office, you know. A number of offices have stopped doing remote work or at least cut it down to only maybe a couple of times a week. Deepa, how are people adapting? You know, is there a sort of transition period because people have gotten so used to remote work?
Yeah, so again, I think if you talk about how people adapt, there is the business adaptation and then there is the people adaptation, right? So from the business adaptation, I would say that the bosses, so the decision makers, are really sort of expecting, they haven't quite calibrated that people are going to take a while to get back into the groove. And that's you know, it's something which we need to have conversations about. Like, people are not comfortable, and suddenly for meetings, they still prefer to be on a Zoom for some of them because they're not comfortable being in a room with everyone and so on. So it ties to the employee welfare. So I think from a business perspective, back to what I said earlier, I think the business must decide what are the non-negotiable meetings where, you know, people need to be there present. Can it be done on rotation or a certain percentage and so on of people? So you need to adapt to that for the face-to-face meetings and conversations. And then from the employee perspective, again, to speak to the supervisors and decide, there are three things I think that the employees look for when they go back to work, right? One is their welfare looked after? So is it a safe environment? Is it stable? Mm-hmm. Safe and secure in terms of now, I guess, COVID, right?
Mm.
And what are the risks and exposures? So something a lot of employers have done is everybody's back to work, but no visitors allowed. So that's good. So it sort of like keeps you, you know, within your little bubble, so to speak. The other one is in terms of the teaming and the supervisors. So can you decide which are the work streams that come into work? So if you're working on a main project that's due in 3 months, and then so this team will get priority. So it's not just about 3-2-4-1 sort of a arrangement. It's really on a fit for purpose. That's really good flexibility that an employer can look at. Otherwise, you know, you may not need to be in 3-2. You can be In the office the whole time if your work requires and it's better done from the office. So that customization and flexibility is something that people are trying to adapt to, I would say. So from the business side, it's about what are the non-negotiables. From the employee side, it's about looking after their welfare. And then the teaming and the supervisory element in there.
Hmm. I think what I found interesting also is that some of us, and I've you know spoken about this with some of my colleagues, a number of us have said that it's also sort of relearning how to interact with your colleagues because you're so used to interacting over Zoom that once you meet some people again in real life, sometimes after months or even a whole year, you sort of forget how to talk to each other in person. Yeah. And there's this whole awkward phase. I guess, Joel, is that normal?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's like how we transition from pre-COVID to COVID lockdown kind of thing, right? We had to adapt to being on Zoom and FaceTime and phone calls and things like that. And it took us about 3 months, 6 months, a year to get used to that. And now as we transition away from it, the same thing is going to happen as well. We get a lot of clients who come in and say things like, oh, I went out for dinner the day with some friends and I was just totally exhausted. I was smashed. I felt like I ran a marathon. And exactly like what you said, you know, we've got clients who come in and said, you know, I went out for a date and I just didn't know what to do with my hands. And the whole time I was just so hyper aware about what I was doing, where I put my hands and things like that. And it's so awkward because, you know, outside of this, you know, I'm full disclosure, I'm wearing shorts right now, right? I just have a work shirt on, right? And that's totally okay. But if it's out in the office or in the studio with you guys, I can't do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just it's a mental transition. I think it's about giving us that time and that space to get ready for that and move back into the wild, so to speak, right? The good thing is there are a lot of companies that have anticipated this, which is excellent. You know, the number of back to office kind of workshops and webinars and trainings we've been giving has been increasing quite a bit, which is fantastic, right? So I think they understand that move to the lockdown was hard on a lot of people. And when we move out of it, it's going to be quite a challenge as well. Right? So if you're one of those people, it's fine. It's normal. Give yourself time, right? Don't stress yourself out. It takes time to get back on the horse again. So hang in there.
I will say one thing I think a lot of people don't miss is the morning and the evening traffic. I think we have seen that come back out in full force. I do not miss the traffic at all. I think that's one of the joys of working from home, or at least a hybrid system of working, right? Because there's so much time and productivity lost as well. If you have to travel far, you spend an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening. Yeah. I think one of you mentioned earlier, you know, that's so much time that you could spend just resting or, you know, if you need it for work, you could use that time as well. If we look back and look forward, you know, at the same time, and I'll ask this to both of you. I'll start with you, Deepa. What do you think we can learn from how we worked in 2021 and use that as we figure out, you know, both employers and employees, as we figure out how we want to work from now on?
Yeah, I think we need to, I guess, redefine what our measures of success are at work. And I don't mean KPIs. I don't mean business outcomes. Mm-hmm. I mean how we measure people's success, right, at work. So it's really about, you know, what is productivity? What does that look like? What does good look like? What does excellence look like, right? And how do we take away all these biases, which were last time about, you know, seeing them do things and watching them and, you know, getting that physical contact with individuals. Conversations cannot be trivialized. So I think I like what Joel said just now about, you know, his example of shorts and a shirt. So how about, imagine if, I was just thinking about this, right? Wouldn't it be great if employers start the week, and it's called reboarding, by the way, people call it, you know, you have onboarding for new hires. And now after coming back to work, we call it reboarding sometimes. Nice. And what it is have that conversation and have a good laugh for an hour about how are you? Wasn't it nice when you could wear a singlet top and just do your calls at home because you don't have to turn on video? And now it's so cold in the office, or it's so hot and the rain and the traffic. And just have a conversation and humanize all the challenges I think that we face helps a lot, because then it brings it all out on the table, whether you are big boss or you're not. And everybody goes through that commonality. So I feel having that conversation really helps get all that things out in the open. Mm. And using that, go back to maybe some new rules of working, you know, some sort of a charter in terms of how we're going to come up with this hybrid environment and so on. So it's really to remove all those biases, visibility factor, and focus on productivity, welfare, and keep having the conversations. That's what I would say.
Mm. And Joel, you know, what do you think we can learn, especially, you know, taking into account what we've been talking about for better mental well-being of employees?
I think I just want to say, Deepa, I loved every single thing you said. I think it's such a wonderful, practical approach to it. And the whole idea of reboarding is just fantastic. I love that very much. I'm going to borrow that if you don't mind. I think from my perspective, I'll take a more existential approach to it. I think 2020, 2021 has been difficult, right? I think for a lot of us, it was the couple of years where we really had to confront our inner demons, press reset on a lot of things, and relearn about how we live our lives, both at work and also socially as well. I think there is a very big risk that once things go back to quote-unquote normal, right, that we would go back to our natural inclination is just go back to old habits. We just go back to what we're used to, what we're comfortable with and things like that. There are going to be some disruptions. There are going to be some changes here and there and things like that. I think the best thing that we can do moving forward is to remember the lessons that we've learned in the past couple of years, all the thing, newfound insights, perspectives, and all that kind of good stuff, right? And take that and run with it, basically. Don't let it just go to waste and say, oh, that was the past 2 years, I'm not going to talk about it because I'm new. Take that and run with it, because I think that's going to be important, and allow that to reshape who you are for the better, hopefully.
Definitely. I think we all want to work in a more sustainable manner and not be overworked all the time. I think everyone is well familiar with the studies that have said that KL is one of the most overworked cities in the world. I think that's something that we really want to move away from. And hopefully we can see something change for the better out of, the pandemic. But we'll keep our eye on what happens, in 2022. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking to HR consultant Deepa George and consultant clinical psychologist Dr. Joe Low for the first of our mini-series where we'll be reflecting on the year that was 2021. And today we looked at how people's mental health fared as they worked from home and now are slowly adapting back to working in the office, and how all of this has impacted their working dynamics, their working relationships with their colleagues and their employers as well. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.